This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the Key Information Document, or KID, before making any final investment decisions. Investing involves risk. The value of an investment and the income from it may fall as well as rise, and investors might not get back the full amount invested. Past performance does not predict future returns. The mention of any particular security or strategy should not be considered as a recommendation. For further information on the Brunner Trust, please go to www.brunner.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to the 17th and latest installment of Connected Investor, the podcast from the Brunner Investment Trust. I'm Joe Lynham, the BBC presenter and News Talk business editor. And in this podcast, we're going to ask what just happened on the markets in the first half of this year. And we'll touch on the hype and hysteria of artificial intelligence and its relevance for investors and, of course, for the Brunner Investment Trust. I'm joined by the co-leads of the Brunner Investment Trust, Christian Schneider, but also Julian Bishop, who is now the co-lead also of the portfolio. Julian and Christian, hello to you both. Can I start with you, Julian, if I may? We're now well into H2, or the second half of the investment year. Can we in any way sum up what we learned in the first two quarters of the year and what it meant for Brunner?
Yeah, sure. First of all, let me just mention that Brunner has a peculiar year end. So we have a November year end. So the first half for us goes to the end of May. And we've just done a lot of work for our interim report, just describing what happened in the first half of the year. I think what I would how I would summarize the first half of global markets generally is one of pretty benign returns. So quite modest returns in sterling terms. But under that, there's been a lot of drama. So we saw a reversal, really, of what happened in 2022. So tech, which had been very weak in 2022, roared back very, very strongly. And a lot of the things that had led in 2022, so oil and gas names, financials, resumed their longstanding underperformance. And that was attributable to, well, a fresh bank crisis in the States with Silicon Valley Bank, and then much weaker commodity prices. So we've seen oil prices fall, 20-30% from their peak, and European gas prices now down 80% year on year. You mentioned artificial intelligence. I think if we look at the tech market, three things happened, really. First of all, in 2022, valuations went down a lot as prices crashed back down to earth. So we got to levels where valuations were a bit more attractive. We also saw interest rates stabilize, and interest rates tend to have a disproportionate impact on the calculations when you calculate the present value of a growth stock. So tech stocks tend to get a bit more impacted by higher interest rates. And then thirdly, this new narrative around artificial intelligence provided the market with a new story. And if there's anything tech investors like, it's a good story. And that was seen in droves in Q2 after a spectacular set of results from a tech company in the States called Nvidia.
A lot of issues in there to unpack, Julian. Can I come to Christian and ask him about that Nvidia issue? It has joined the $1 trillion club. Is that a direct result of the AI boom, or are there other reasons why Nvidia has boomed?
Yeah, it's mainly that, we think. If you look back 6-7 months from here, at the time, kind of nobody would have guessed that tech comes roaring back so quickly and so massively. But as Julian just highlighted, there was a massive impetus from this focus on AI, which started to lurk just before Christmas when kind of ChatGPT came into focus, and clearly Nvidia as the kind of main provider of GPUs, graphic processing units that do most of the heavy lifting in terms of processing the AI tools out there, kind of being seen as one of the main beneficiaries of whatever AI brings to the world ultimately. So it clearly needed this kind of impetus. But you saw strength across the board in tech land from 6-7 months ago, and what a surprise. And to a large degree, that has also to do and was further boosted by the lack of further kind of increases in the 10-year yields, which basically stagnated since October last year. And so that kind of headwind we saw 2022 mainly, 10-year rising and the risk-free rate rising kind of disappeared, and the market again focused on fundamentals of those tech companies, which are across the board actually quite sound. And the same is true for Nvidia, of course.
Can I go back to Julian? And I'm assuming right now, Julian, that you are not artificial, that you are not an avatar, that you're actually there. Just wave if it's you. Yes, okay, it's you. Now, AI has been predicted that it could even spell the end of humanity as we know it. I mean, obviously, that's a bit hysterical, but some very, very senior people, including bosses of AI developers, wrote that famous letter in the springtime. We're now well into the second half of the calendar year. Is that hype kind of abating?
The share prices are still going up generally. I think things have stabilized a little bit since the frenzy in May and June. But yeah, share prices for large cap tech across the board are still pretty elevated. Nvidia has been in a little bit of a league of its own because it's seen as this pure play on AI. But that enthusiasm for tech has been across the board in these large tech companies. So Apple, Microsoft is the biggest holding in Brenner, Amazon, etc., have all participated in that. And they're absolutely enormous companies now. I mean, that's the key thing to emphasize. You know, Apple is a $3 trillion market cap company, so it's bigger individually than the entire UK stock market. So it's considerably more valuable than the FTSE 100.
Astonishing. I wonder whether that says more about the UK stock market and companies delisting than it says about Apple.
Partially, but in itself, it's just a vast sum of money, you know. And if you work in finance, you get used to billions and now trillions of dollars. But by any standard of the imagination, by any stretch of the imagination, Apple is absolutely vast. And what we're seeing as well is a unique concentration of the U.S. stock market. So now the biggest five U.S. companies are worth about 25% of the entire S&P 500, and we've never seen anything like that before. And you know, normally as a global investor, you don't really have to think about the stocks that you're underweight, but more and more you do have to do that. And Christian and I have been having some conversations, you know, recently about these very large companies that we don't own. But the good news is, you know, in the first half, despite this shift to mega cap tech, we did keep up performance wise. So we were up 1.3% relative in the period. Our dividend went up 8% year on year. So we are keeping up with this market. But our holdings tend to be a little bit, with the exception of Microsoft, tend to be a little bit further down the market cap spectrum. And we think offer on balance better value.
Christian, I'm going to bring you in and ask you whether things might change now in the second half, or whether you think tech companies might be approaching a bit of overvaluation given what they've seen over the last 8 months.
Yes, you know, kind of short-term market direction, guessing is always very difficult. As I said earlier in my first answer, who would have guessed 6 months ago that tech comes roaring back? So who am I to tell whether the next six months look different? But you're right. Clearly, tech stocks have regained some valuation premium in the last 6 months. So while fundamentals have been great for them, there was a significant re-rating in the last 6 months on these names. And kind of one has to keep that in mind. And clearly at these levels, those stocks are more at risk if any sort of correction in global multiples would approach, triggered, for example, by more rate hikes or anything. Bringing up a possibility here, but clearly is a risk for these names. Absolutely.
Now, Julian, let's move into the kind of the bigger macroeconomic situation. We saw a huge jump in interest rates in all the central banks, the major ones that we focus on here in Europe and North America. The question now for the second half is, when do they pause? When do they reach the top of the ladder, do you think? And how long they will stay at the top of the ladder? Because, I mean, if you had asked me 3-6 months ago, people would be talking about whether the Fed, for example, would be lowering interest rates in the second half of 2023. They're not talking about that now.
No. I mean, we don't have a crystal ball, and we tend to be more focused on bottom-up stock specifics, but you know, nevertheless, I can try and address your answer. I mean, the reality is in the UK that, you know, inflation is proving to be very stubborn. So I think that the print for May, the core inflation figure, which excludes volatile food and energy, was up 7% year on year, and that's a couple of percent higher than it is in the States. So it's more of an issue in the UK, you know, hence the Bank of England just raising rates from 4.5% to 5%. And obviously with time that will feed through into people's mortgage prices. So there's obviously a pretty bleak outlook, I think, in the short term anyway, for the UK consumer. I think in the States we're nearer there. You know, inflation there seems to be coming down a bit faster. And certainly if you think about all the sort of leads into inflation, I think the news is going to get better from here going forward. So, you know, we mentioned earlier some of the commodity price declines that we've seen. And now if you look year on year, most commodities are down. There was also, you know, in the UK and the US and in Europe over COVID, a lot of money flushed into the economy, you know, so huge spike in M2, basically helicopter money. So people paying people not to work during COVID. So these stimulus payments, which were probably sensible and the ethically right thing to do. But effectively, paying people to do nothing is as close a definition to helicopter money as you're likely to find. And I think that had a strong inflationary impulse.
Especially, you know, since a lot of people hoarded money, since they couldn't fly and go on holidays, and maybe they couldn't do that extension that they wanted to do. So they hoarded money. And then that money was unleashed, Christian, in, you know, 2022 and now in 2023.
Yes, absolutely. There is clearly a demand overhang in the economy. So, too good of an economy from this money lurking around and people coming out and spending it simply. And the goals by central banks is clearly with interest rate rises to cool off demand in the economy, cool off the speed of growth in the economy. Hence. And so far, surprisingly, there is less damage to economic growth than kind of central banks would have thought / hoped for. While interest rates, inflation is coming off a bit as we speak, the big question is whether we reach the target zone for central banks around 2%. Anytime soon, or whether they have to keep on fighting inflation for longer. But to Julian's point, the US looks closer to this point than we over here in Europe and the UK.
So it's central bankers, you know, an enviable task really to get the economy to slow. You know, that's their job, and they've done that. And you know, GDP growth on both sides of the Atlantic is very close to zero. So they're succeeding in their task, which is no, not one which I envy, frankly.
Christian, can I finish with the investment kind of strategy and procedure for Brunner? Do you kind of look at a small number of companies, invest in them, or do you look at a much wider portfolio to kind of spread your risk?
Of course, risk diversification is an important point for every investor. Don't put all eggs in one basket, as people say. And in forming the portfolio, building the portfolio, kind of we'd rather try to kind of make sort of 60 single bets on single companies and their future progression, and rather than making one big binary bet on, say, what interest rates do, what the GDP is doing, kind of, because the former is a much easier task and kind of puts us at less risk of failure in our kind of estimates.
So thank you very much, Julian and Christian, the portfolio co-managers of the Brunner Investment Trust. That's all the time we have for this episode of The Connected Investor. And thank you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to Connected Investor wherever you get your podcasts. You could also leave a review on Apple Podcasts and give us a rating so that we can learn for the next time. That would also be great. You can also send messages to us via the website, that is brunner.co.uk. That's www.brunner.co.uk. From Christian Schneider and Julian Bishop, and from me, Joe Lynham, ta-ta for now.